thank you so much for coming tonight and visiting with us. We certainly do appreciate your presence. I can remember the first time I went into a building like this, I didn't know what to expect because I hadn't been raised in this sort of a way, and it was all new to me. And so it might be if you're visiting that you might feel out of place. We want you to know we don't want you to feel out of place. We don't want to trouble you. We want to help you. We want you to see that we believe that the Lord wants you to be here. We want you to be here. And so please feel free to ask us any question about anything. We don't know everything, but if you have some question about the Bible, please don't go home and let that ponder in your mind and not find the answer if we can help you to. Any way we can help you to serve God and to go to heaven when life is over, that's what we're trying to do. We're just people trying to go by the Bible. I know that sounds like everybody says that, but it looks like that not everybody's trying to do that. And so we're trying to demonstrate that we're trying to just listen to God and do what God has to say. So thank you for coming tonight. We're looking at the book of Ecclesiastes, and it just kind of teaches us about the danger of living a life that is vain and empty and has no purpose. I mean, it's hard to imagine a person could live their life and really, when they got finished, it would have been better if they had never been born. Can you imagine that? I tell about when I was in school every year, the school would call my parents in and try to get my parents to take me out of school. They said, "The boy, something's wrong with him. He can't learn anything. Take him out of school." And they said, "No, he's going to go to school." And so they kept on trying to hold me back, and my parents kept fussing, so they got me up to the third grade. And finally, the school just said, "We can't send him any further." And so they made me stay back another year in the third grade. And so I came back to school the next year, and they said, "You're going back to the third grade." I said, "Well, I've already done that." They said, "You didn't do any good. You got to go back and do it again." I thought, "Whoa, man, I wasted a whole year trying to do that." And then I went along and became 44 years old. And on my 44th birthday, I thought I was 45. So I went that whole year thinking I was 45. And next year, my birthday, my wife said, "No, you're just 45. I said, "You mean I got to do that again?" And so it just seemed like a big waste, you know, to have to go back and tread the same meal that you'd already been down. Ecclesiastes is trying to get us not to live our life that way. Let's don't live a life that will have been a total waste because we didn't listen to what God had to say. So Ecclesiastes is the writer showing us here is a man who was wealthy. He had opportunity to do everything under the sun that he wanted to do. It seemed like he pursued everything. He wasn't afraid to try and investigate anything under the sun to try to figure out what should you do with your life. Have you ever wondered, what's my life about? What should I do? What will give my life meaning? And so he shows us as he goes down these roads that sometimes look like he's going down a dead end. He shows us really the only reason the road has a dead end to it is because you didn't go with God. That's the reason it's a dead end. If you go with God and listen to God, everything you can do in life has meaning and purpose. Everything means something to God. And one day you're going to give an account like everybody, and nobody else can give an account for you. You're going to give an account for yourself. And so it just helps us see how what we should do is trying to figure out what we should be doing while we're here before it's too late. Before we find out that maybe somebody lied to us, or maybe we just never did investigate to find out what we should have been doing. And so we end up being lost as a result of that. So let's turn tonight and look as the writer continues our study and talking in the sixth chapter here about what we need to see. In the fifth chapter, as the writer talks to us here about, first of all, about religion itself. Have you ever thought about how that religion... You know, I talk about my mom some. My mom says she won't go to church because she said, "They're just a bunch of hypocrites at church." And I said, "Mom, sure they are." I said, "Do you know why people are hypocrites at church?" She said, "Why?" I said, "People counterfeit $100 bills. They don't counterfeit pennies and dimes. They know that Christianity is valuable, and so people sometimes want to counterfeit it." And I said, "The old devil wants them to counterfeit it." But I said, "Let me tell you, do you want to not go to church with hypocrites, but go to eternal damnation with them?" I said, "If hypocrites are going to be lost, you might be lost with them if you don't go to church and get that worked out." And so we've got to see, good people, that when you go to church, that God wants us to have meaning and purpose to going to church. Coming into the house of God, when you think about the church in the Old Testament, in Isaiah chapter 2 and verse 1, Isaiah the son of Amos, what he saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem, that God said in the last days, people say, "Come, let us go up to the mountain of the house of the God of Jacob, and let him teach us of his ways, and we'll walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem." And so there were people, God looked, way down the road and saw people down here in 2016 who would have a desire to say, I want to do what God says and I want to do it God's way. And so God knew that. He said, I'm going to tell you, if you'll come to the house of God, I'll teach you how to go. But you've got to make up your mind whether you're going to go that way or not. And so Isaiah saw it a long time ago. And so thank you for having the disposition of mind to come tonight and to think about what does God say. And so when he talks to us here in the fifth chapter and says, keep thy foot when thou goest to the house of God, and be more ready to hear than to give the sacrifice of fools, for they consider not that they do evil. Now notice he says there's a danger when you go to the house of God. When you go into the house of God, you know, we know that the New Testament church, in 1 Timothy, the third chapter, the Apostle Paul said in verse 15, if I tarry long, you may know how you ought to behave yourself in the house of God, which is the church of the living God, the pillar and the ground of the truth. And so we as people of God are supposed to hold this truth up, be a pillar and a ground to it, and know how to behave when we come into the house of God. There's a certain kind of demeanor, behavior that goes on, ought to go on here. And we ought to know what that is. And so coming into this house, the writer of Ecclesiastes said a long time ago, watch your foot when you go. In other words, watch how you walk. And walk in such a way that you're walking so that coming to church will not be in vain for you. If you go out in the world and do all kind of ungodly things and live ungodly and immoral, and let me tell you, it's easy to do. People do it a lot of times. Young people grow up in the church. Their parents have made them go to church. And so they go, but they don't want to be here. When they get old enough to not go anymore, they give it up and they quit because they never did become attached to God. They didn't get the serious and the meaning of the importance of worshiping God and in worshiping God the right way. And we could spend a lot of time talking about worshiping God the right way tonight. We could look at examples of where people did things to change the worship of God, and God rejected them. You don't get very far in the Bible to Genesis, the fourth chapter. You see Cain and Abel worshiping God, and God accepted one man and accepted his sacrifice. One man did something other than what God said, and so God rejected that man and rejected his sacrifice. And so you don't get very far to see worship has always been important to God, and God has got to tell us how to do that. And what we've got to do is we've got to make sure we guard our feet so when we come into the house of God, we don't waste our time and offer the sacrifice of a fool. A fool will be somebody who comes in here and they don't live right. They don't do what is right. They don't know what is right. They just come in and say, oh, I love the Lord. I love Jesus. And they just go on with that, but they don't do what the Lord said. They don't watch the way they walk and make sure they're walking the way the Lord said. Jesus said, why in Luke 6:46, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say? That means if I'm going to be his follower, be his disciple, if I'm going to follow him, I need to know what he said and do what he said. And so here in this Old Testament book, the writer is focusing now on the fact that your worship can be vain and it can be empty, and you can just offer the sacrifice of a fool by coming here without watching how you walk. And when you come into the house of God, to think about that. Now notice he says there's some dangers for us to watch out for. He says in verse 2, be not hasty with thy mouth, and let not thy heart, that would be your thoughts, be not rash with thy mouth, and let not thy heart be hasty to utter anything before God. For God is in heaven, and thou art upon the earth. Therefore, let thy words be few. And so he says, when you come into this house, what you need to think about, first of all, when you come, is don't come in here and want to do a lot of talking and say a lot of things. I've tell people one thing to learn about learning about God. I've met a lot of people, and I know they will never learn about God because I would sit down and talk with them. They would ask me a question. As soon as I started answering the question, they didn't like the answer, so they would jump in and interrupt me and start talking and say something else. They'd raise another question. And then I would start answering the question. They'd jump in again. And so I told this one boy, I said, you know, I'll never be able to tell you a thing in the world. He said, why is that? I said, you can't keep your mouth closed. I said, you asked me a question, but you won't let me answer it, you see. And so I'm going to tell you, you can't learn about God by running your mouth. You've got to hush up. You know that faith comes by hearing the word of God, Romans 10:17. You know what that means, don't you? That the eye of faith is on the side of your head over here. If you want to learn about God, don't go looking this way and say, well, I look at that. That doesn't look like what I think God wants. And I don't think that's the way it is. Don't go by what you see. We don't walk by sight, Paul said in 2 Corinthians, the 5th chapter, verse 7. We don't walk by sight. We walk by faith. That means we really, I know this sounds crazy, but you might just kind of imagine closing your eyes and opening up your ears and letting God tell you something and keep your mouth shut for a minute or two. And let somebody tell you what the Bible says. Then you go home and think about that, and then you can ask some questions about it. But learn to keep your mouth shut. You look in the New Testament in the parable of the sower. Jesus shows us there that the kingdom grows because somebody is sowing the seed of the word of the kingdom, and these words are falling down, and people are hearing those words. Anybody that comes to God, Jesus said in John 6, 44, 45, we've got to be taught of God. So God's got to tell us something. So when you're hearing me read the Bible, you're hearing my audible voice, and I'm unimportant. Anybody can get up here and read this book to you. The important thing is that when somebody reads it, you're hearing the words of God himself. This book is inspired, 2 Timothy 3:16. All scripture is inspired. That means God breathed into inspire. Have you ever thought about expire? If you expire, you're breathing out. But when you inspire, you're breathing in. So God has breathed into this book. And if you will listen to it and be quiet and don't just start jumping up and down about things you disagree with, just listen to it and close your mouth so you can hear what God says, and then go away and think that over a little bit, you see. So he's saying to us, just don't come in here with a lot of words. People want to talk and say things, so don't do that with have a mouth that is rash. And then don't let your heart, neither let your heart be hasty, so and your thoughts even. So you can be sitting there and you can get upset. You know, Jesus said, what is written in the law and how readest thou? So number one, Jesus said, what's written in this book? And number two, how do you read? You can have a hasty heart. So that makes me mad. No, I'm not going to listen anymore and get up. I've had people stomp out on more than one occasion. Matter of fact, when I first obeyed the gospel, I stomped out twice before they ever got me calmed down. And I thought, you know, it took me a while to realize I'm hearing things I never thought. I'd never heard God's word before, never read it, didn't know anything about it. But I thought I knew what it ought to be. And I finally had to learn, I don't know anything until God tells me. And so here's a picture now of not letting your worship be vain. Watch how you walk when you go to the house of God, and don't be like a fool. Comes in here and just offers a sacrifice. It doesn't mean a thing in the world. And don't be hasty or rash with your mouth and hasty in your heart. And realize this is why you ought to do that, because, my friend, God is in heaven, and we are down here on the earth. I want you to think about what that says. If you look at the vastness of the universe, and you think about this little bitty speck called earth that's in the vastness of the universe, and then think about on this little bitty speck called earth, here's these little bitty ants walking around down here, and we think that we can tell God how it ought to be, or tell God what we think ought to be. We need to realize God is in heaven, and we're down here on this earth. And so what that says is recognize your smallness. Recognize your insignificance to know. I tell people, you know, have you ever thought about if a fish could talk? And you say to the fish, what is water like? He couldn't tell you because that's all he knows. He's just been in water all his life. He can't tell you what it's like to stand up on the ground, walk around among people and live with air, breathing air. All he knows is water. Somebody has to come from the outside of that water who knows what water's about, knows what life's about, to go in there and tell that fish so he would know there's something more than just water. We're living in the world here, and this is all we know. We haven't been to heaven. We don't know what God's about. And we don't know what God likes and what God not until God comes down and tells us. And the great thing is, we've got this old book here telling us that there's a lot of roads that are just a dead-end road when you travel without traveling with God. And so the writer says, let's be careful and realize when we come in here, we are small, and we don't really have the ability or the right to tell God something because he's up there, he knows what's about, and we're just living down here. This is all we know. And so he says to us in verse 3, a dream cometh through a multitude of business, and a fool's voice is known by the multitude of his words. So here's a picture of somebody who's just a daydreamer. He's all the time dreaming something, thinking something. You know, people do that with religion. They just dream up things. I read about a lady who went to church one time. This preacher was preaching. He got all excited, got the people all excited. And this woman, she said she was sitting in the building preacher was preaching, and all of a sudden she started feeling like she was a feather. And she said, I felt like when the preacher was preaching, I felt like I was just floating. I came up off the ground, started floating. And she said, then after a while, I kept on preaching. And then all of a sudden she said, I felt like I was saved because of the preaching I heard. And I just know I'm saved because I felt like I was. And she talked to this preacher who had been reading the Bible. And he said, well, you didn't really do what the Bible said. And so she said, well, I feel like I'm saved. He said, well, let me ask you, when you felt like you were a feather, were you really floating around? She said, well, no, I wasn't really floating around. I wasn't really a feather. He said, well, then you realize what you felt, what you thought was really not what was right. He said, then you said you felt like you were saved. How do you know you were saved? She said, well, I felt that. He said, well, you already said you felt that way about a feather, but that wasn't right. He said, you need to open up your Bible and don't go by what you feel and listen to God and realize that when God tells you something, you might think it and you might dream it and you might imagine something, but my friend, that's not going to get the job done. We've got to listen to what God says. And so a multitude of dreams, we think of in a lot of business, we can go on with all the things we can dream up. And a fool's voice is known by the multitude of his words. You ever notice sometimes? Sometimes people call me on the phone or meet somebody somewhere on the street somewhere. And I know these people, when they start talking, and sometimes I'm afraid I'm becoming one of them, they just start talking and talking and talking. And you listen to them talk for 15 minutes and they won't say a word. It kind of reminds me of a translator that I talked to in India years ago. This old boy went to India, and he was really highly educated, and he got over there and thought he would impress these common Indian people. He started using these big words and speaking, and this translator was listening to him, and I could tell he was having trouble translating it. And so the fellow said something real big and fancy, and the Indian fellow just said a couple of things. In a few minutes, this boy said another big long line of fancy stuff, and this old boy said another few words. And then this guy said something else like that, and the old boy said something else, and everybody busted out laughing. And so I thought, I wonder what in the world all that was about. And so I got the translator off privately after that happened. I said, I want to know what went on. I said, I didn't understand what my old buddy was saying, and I don't think you did either. He said, no, I didn't. He said, the first time he talked, I told everybody, I said, he hadn't said anything yet. And then he said the second time, he said some more, and said, he still hadn't said anything. And then finally he said, I don't believe he's going to say anything. But you know, you can just get to where you think that, oh, your words and business going to make people, you impress them with your words. No, you're not. You don't need to do that. Just tell the fact. Tell people how it is. Let them see what God has to say. And let that be the end of that. Now notice the writer goes on to say, after telling us that, he says in the next verse, in verse 4, when thou vowest a vow unto God, defer not to pay it, for he that hath no pleasure in fools, pay that which thou vowest. And so what we see here is a picture of what God says about people who make vows and give their word on things. You know, people do that a lot. When you think about confessing your allegiance to Jesus, when you confess your allegiance, come before people and tell people, I believe Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and I'm going to follow Jesus. You know, when people are baptized, they're making up their mind, I'm going to be a disciple of Jesus. I'm going to follow him. But then in a little while, you find out in the gospel account, Jesus said, you know, there were people who said, Jesus will follow you anywhere you go. He said, okay, come on, let's go. He said, well, wait a minute. I got to go home and bury my daddy. And I got to go home and say farewell to my mom and dad. And the other fellow said, well, listen, I went out and bought some oxen. I got to go look at it. Now, who would do something like that? Another guy said, I bought some property. I got to go see what I bought. Does anybody do business like that? And the other old boy, he was the most honest of all of them. He said, well, I got married and I can't come. At least he admitted he was henpecked. But you see, people do that. They say, I want to be a disciple. I want to follow the Lord. They make a vow when they're baptized. I'm going to be a disciple of Jesus. And then when they come right down to it, they don't do what they said. And you think about all the things that people do in life when they shoot their mouth off and say something hastily. You remember what you see in the Old Testament when Jacob was fleeing the land to go to Laban's place, and Esau was after him. He said, God, if you protect me and take care of me, I'll do what you said, be faithful to you. And so God took care of him, he got over there. And so he still kind of fooled around, was deceitful and did what he wanted to do, kept doing those things, and he made a vow to God. He had to come all the way back to Bethel, and find out there the night that God changed his name to the Prince of Israel, Prince of God. And so he made up his mind and decided he was going to do what he said he would do a long time ago. Why do we do that? You know, Hannah, she prayed to God, said, God, you give me a son, you give me a child, and I'll dedicate him, I'll devote him to you. And so she made a vow. And when God gave her a child, she took him after he was weaned. She took him, of all places, down there where Eli was. And there was a mess going on there. I don't know if I took my child over in that mess or not. But she made a vow to God, and she did what she vowed. What about Jephthah? Jephthah said, God, I'm going to go out to battle. You give me victory in the battle. When I come back, I'll sacrifice whatever's the first thing come out of my house. He came home after that victory in the battle, and the first one to come out the door of the house was his daughter, only child he had. And so he took her family and dedicated and devoted her to the service of the temple. And so she continued to do that. So she couldn't get married. He couldn't have any grandchildren. And so that ended his bloodline right there. But a man made a hasty vow. But my friend, he kept the vow that he made. And so if we can see that when you make a vow to God, what about when you get married, People, they say, I love this person. I want to marry him, and I'll be devoted to him all my life. And so after they get married, and I tell people, all of us have learned, I'm sure, when my wife and I first got married, I can remember that first night together. I thought, this is the most wonderful thing. I've married the most wonderful person in all the world. And so woke up the next morning, and her hair, I'd never seen her hair look like that in the morning. And I'd never noticed that her breath hadn't been like that before. And so I began to wonder, so I started thinking like that a little bit, I thought, I was really close, but now I wonder. And I noticed time went on, as we would have problems and different disagreements and problems. And sometimes I'd say, I don't know, we're a long way apart. But I learned as time went on, that's the way everybody's relationship is in life. You come and go until finally as you get older and you become like each other, like the Bible says. You become like one person. My wife and I can carry on a conversation without saying a word. You know what I'm talking about? We'll be going down the road and she'll say something. I said, I was getting ready to say that myself. And then I'll say something. She says, I was getting ready to say that myself. And it's amazing how we think alike. We like the same kind of movies. We like to go to the same places. And if somebody comes to my house and starts talking, and my wife looks at me, she'll go like that. I know what that means. So I'll keep my mouth shut and listen some more, And then and sometimes she'll be talking to somebody, and I'll go like that to her, and she'll get the message. We've been talking a long time. And that's what happened. So see, it used to be when we get mad, we might go for a whole day without talking. Isn't that silly when you're young? You don't talk to each other for a whole day because you're mad about something. Nowadays, we'll get mad and we'll talk about things and talk straight to each other. And so we'll about 30 seconds and we're right back on track again. Those things don't matter, And you learn, you've made a vow before God and you can't throw that vow away. Most people don't learn it. They throw it away and think, I'll find somebody else who'll be happy with somebody else. They marry somebody else and they go through the same process. And I went to my class reunion after 10 years of graduating from high school. One of the girls, they gave an award for who had been married the most. One girl had been married 5 times already, and everybody laughed about that. And I said, I wouldn't be laughing too much. And she said, why is that? I said, either you don't know how to pick them or you don't have much to offer, but something's wrong somewhere. But you think about the fact that what we've got to do is we've got to work things out. We've got to be the right kind of person. And when we make a vow before God, let's make sure we say to God what we mean and let's keep that. And so then the writer says to us in the next verse, better is it that thou shouldest not vow than that thou shouldest vow and not pay. Suffer not thy mouth to cause thy flesh to sin, neither say before the priest or the angel of the priest or the messenger that it was an error. Wherefore shouldest God be angry at thy voice and destroy the work of thy hands? You see, when you tell God something, my friend, don't think you're just fooling around and just blabbing your mouth and running your mouth. You better be careful what you say you're going to do to God, because God expects you to keep what you say. So don't make a hasty vow. Think about it a long time. It'd be better to never make a vow than to make some vow and not determine to keep that, you see. And then the writer says in verse 7, for in the multitude of dreams and many words, there are also divers vanities, but fear thou God. And so what's the writer saying about coming to church? What is the purpose for coming? Why are we here? And I tell folks, don't go out that back door the way you came in. Every time you come in here and say, God, I'm going to listen. I want to hear what you got to say. And I'm going to go home and look in this mirror. James calls the New Testament the perfect law of liberty. And he says, it's like looking into a mirror. You know what? I don't spend much time looking into a mirror. You all know why, don't you? But you know what? When a person looks in a mirror, what they see, a mirror is an exact representation of what you are. That's why I don't like to look at it. But what most people do in the mirror is they look at the mirror, they see themselves, and they don't like that. So they turn over and say, oh, look at that mess over there. And look, oh, isn't that a mess? Look at that mess. They never look to see what do I look like, and what am I doing, and what should I be doing for myself to change. And so the writer says the reason we come in here is so we can hear what God says and go out of this building with a greater reverence, a greater awe, greater respect for God. I tell you what the Bible will do. It will cause you to realize how frail and how insignificant you are and how great God is. And so let's come to church. Let's make sure we're not wasting our time. Let's live right out on the street and let's come in here, watch what we're saying, what we're doing, what's in our heart, and let's learn to have a reverential awe of God. That's what worship's about. I've come in here to draw near to God. I want God to tell me what to be and help me to be what I... You might think I'm preaching this to you, but I tell you, I spend all day whittling on myself looking at this stuff. And so it's something that I need as much as anybody. That's why it's in here. And so let's make sure that our awe of God and our reverence for God develops because of that. Now notice, he turns to look at what we've already seen already in verse 8 when he says, if thou seest oppression of the poor, violent perverting of justice, judgment and justice in a providence, marvel not at the matter, for he that is higher than the highest regardeth, and there be higher than they. Now notice he's saying, if you see injustice, if you notice you see a lot of injustice in the world, you know what it will do? It will frustrate you. You'll wonder, why doesn't God, that's why the atheist blames God. Why doesn't God, listen, God didn't do that in the first place. You see some injustice, men have done that. And so when you see some injustice, don't throw your hands up and get mad at God. What you need to realize is don't get upset about that. Realize something. When you see that, you understand that don't marvel about it. Don't be amazed about it. You realize that one day, God, there are people watching, and there are people up above those who are watching, and beyond that, there's God seeing it all, and one day, God is going to make everything right. So don't you worry for a minute. Don't you say, well, that person got away with that. Well, that's like I told my boys sometime they'd go in the store, in the grocery store, and they'd act up. I said, now, boys, you can act up here in front of all these people, and you can act a fool, but I'm going to get you home. When I get you home, it's going to be a different story. You better remember the long arm of the law reach all the way to the house, so you better watch yourself. And so, you know, you might get away with it today. You might pull up, but let me tell you, God is going to reach out to you one day. If you're involved in injustice and violence against somebody, let me tell you, God's taking notes on it, and it matters to God, and God's going to make it. And let me tell you, you can't do near as good a job of making things right as God can, and you can't find near the justice that God can find. So you just don't marvel about that. Don't worry about that. There's going to be injustice in the world. We're living in a world marred by sin. People are in the world. You know, I tell folks at Madison, sometimes somebody get upset and see some problem or something. They say, well, I'm going to go to church somewhere else. I said, why? They said, I want to go to a perfect church. I said, well, if you find one, don't you go. It won't be perfect anymore. You'll mess it up. You better stay with us. But you see, we need to understand all of us are the same. We're trying to work through this, don't you see? We're trying to do what God wants us to do. And so the writer says to us then in the next verse, in verse 9 he says, moreover, the profit of the earth is for all, and the king himself is served by the field. Notice, here's a picture of what we need to understand about in our country, in our land. We've got a president over our country. But if our president just robs people and takes taxes and steps on people, our country will not survive that way. But if the king understands that his profit is benefit is if the field is plowed and taken care of and everybody's doing what they can do and working together, well, then the king, you see, he'll be benefit. Everybody is benefiting. If everybody can work and do good and work together, oh, the old king's going to continue to be a good king and enjoy that. But when he starts stepping on oppressing people, that's not going to work in a way. And so thank God when you've got somebody that's in the place of position to make decisions about where we're going, that they let the country and let people do what they can do so that everybody can enjoy the benefits of it and not just take it all from one and let somebody else consume it. And then the writer says to us in the next verse, for he that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver, nor he that loveth abundance with the increase, this also is vanity. That word vanity again means fleeting, empty, transitory. And here's a picture of somebody who loves silver. If you love silver, it's kind of like somebody said, trying to quench your thirst with drinking salt seawater. You know, when you get out in the ocean and you're out stranded somewhere and you get thirsty and you drink salt water makes you thirsty. And you'll dehydrate in a hurry by drinking that salt water. And that's what an old boy does who loves money. I've told folks, if you take an old boy who loves money and you stick a $100 bill in each one of his hands and throw him in the river, while he'd drown before he'd ever let one of them go. That's the way people are. You know, some of these rich men who've lived in our country before, one, I can't remember the name of the old boy now, when I was younger, he was a billionaire, and somebody said to him, well, how much money does it take to satisfy you? He said, just a little bit more. And that's the trouble, people. We just don't understand that gaining and getting more and more, we just don't realize you're not going to be happy with that. It's not going to satisfy you. You'll never be satisfied. You'll never be happy. And let me tell you about that. If you're not content right now where you are right now with a job you've got, with a mate you've got, with the children you've got, and with the church where you are, if you're not satisfied right now, let me tell you, you probably never will be satisfied, because contentment is something you learn, you see. It's something you develop as you go along. You learn to be content. That's what you do. It's a process of realizing this is good enough, this is satisfying, and I'm going to be okay, and just to learn to adjust that. I've told this story about when I was years ago, somebody gave me a sailboat. I went down to my daddy's, took my boys with me, and we got out in that sailboat, and I didn't know anything about sailing. I hadn't even thought to try to figure it out. I just thought, this thing just works. You just get in the wind, let her go. So we got out in that boat. First thing was happened, the mast came around and the wind caught the sail, and it hit my dad's head, knocked his hat off, and that upset him. And then Scott, my middle son, he pushed on a plug in the floor, and the boat started filling up water, and I was trying to figure out what to do. And Scott said, Dad, let me show. I said, no, we're going to sink, son. And so he said, Dad, if you let go. So I let go, and Scott pulled up on it, and it quit. So we bailed the water out. And so then we got in there, and we started taking off. And we went across that lake and got out in the middle, and we got it so it was right up on the edge, and all of a sudden, next thing you know, we turned over and lost our lunch out in the middle of the lake. We had to turn it back over, forgot to do that and get the water out of it. We went all the way to the other side of the lake, and my daddy said, now, son, you've really done it now, dummy. I said, what's that, Dad? He said, how are we going to get back? The wind's blowing that away. I thought, how do people get back? And so I thought, man, what are we going to do? I was content to ride one way, but I want to go back home, see? And so we got out there, and I began to realize, if you turn the sail, and I want to go over there, but I thought, I'm going to go over this way. So I turned that sail and went across the lake and got a little way that way. I got over this side, turned up, and I learned something about life. You can't go where you want to go in life. But what you've got to learn to do, if you want to get somewhere, you have to adjust your sail all the time. And just be content that the wind, you can't control the winds in life. So be satisfied with whatever you got. And so the writer says to us then, after telling us that, he says in verse 11, when goods increase, they then increase that eat them. And what good is there to the owner thereof, saving beholding them with the eye? Here's a picture of an old boy gets rich. And you know, when you get rich, what you end up doing, your company grows, you start hiring more people, and you get more people consuming onto it. You know, you get more people having to draw from the company. You get what I call leeches that catch on your company, and they start drawing money out. So next thing you're worrying yourself to death trying to take care of all these leeches that have got onto the bureaucracy that gets to it, you know. And then you've got that. And so the writer says, when you realize what you need to learn about life is when you get all that, what good is it for you? What if I were to tell you now, I've got a pocket full of rubies here, and a ruby's worth a lot of money, and so I could get them out and show them to you, and I could count them, but you know what? As long as I got a pocket of rubies, that's all they're good for, is to look at and count. They're not worth a dime unless I use them. Everything you have is not worth a dime unless you do something with it. You can have a pocket full of money, a load of money in the bank, you can get it out and count it, look at it, but it's not any good until you do something with it. So all you can do is behold it until you decide you're going to do something with it. And so the writer says in verse 12, the sleep of the laboring man is sweet, whether he eat little or much, but the abundance of the rich man will not allow him to sleep. And you think about what rich people do. They worry about somebody suing them, somebody robbing them, somebody stealing from them. And so they can't sleep at night. I've heard a lot of fellas who've got a lot of money say, I'd write a big check for a good night's sleep. You know, they got so much money and so many things, they just can't sleep. That's what that does to you. And so why do we think that money is the thing that gives life meaning? The love of money is the root. Not money itself. Money's a good thing. I'm glad to have a little money, and I'd like to do good with money. But I'm going to tell you, I don't love money. It's just a tool in my hand. And so here's a picture of people learning from this writer that you can get mixed up about money, and you can waste your time and waste your life. And so he says in verse 13, there is a sore evil which I have seen under the sun, namely riches kept for the owner thereof to their hurt. But whosoever, but those riches perish by evil travail, and he that begetteth the son, and there be nothing in his hand. Here's a picture of an old boy who gets rich, and something, the stock market crashes, and he loses all that he had. He's got this son, and so now how's this son going to survive? You see, the son was counting on riding on the father's money, and some evil came, and that took away. You know what that says about money? You can't depend on money. You can't rely upon money. We think, I've got this money in the bank, and I'm going to be okay. You don't know what can happen tomorrow. The stock market can crash in one night and bring this country to its knees. And so don't put your confidence in money. Don't trust in money, because that can perish. Here's a man who was depending on it to take care of his family, and that just was not going to get the job done because some kind of a crash took place. And it says then in the next verse, and he came forth to his mother's womb, naked shall he return as he came, and shall take nothing of his labor which he hath carried in his hand. And this also is a sore travail, that in all points he, as he came, he shall go. What profit hath he that hath the labor that laboreth for the wind? So you come into the world and you work hard and you get all this and you get it all. But when you go out, you know what you're going to go out with? Somebody said, have you ever seen a hearse going down the street with a U-Haul trailer hooked to it? And then nobody's going down the road taking anything with him. You're not going to take a thing. You came in the world without anything. You're going out the same way. So don't worry about that. Don't think that gives life meaning. Don't think, well, if I just had some money, I'd be important and I'd really be happy. No, you wouldn't. You're happy and you can be content just where you are. And don't think that, well, if I just get a bunch, I'll be. You're going to leave it all. And so don't worry about Howard Hughes. I think I mentioned, somebody said, how much money did old Howard Hughes leave when he died? And old country boy said he left all of it. That's what you're going to do. And so notice, he then comes to this idea in verse 17, and says, all his days also he eateth in darkness, and he hath much sorrow and wrath with his sickness. Here's an old boy, works hard, gets all this money. He thinks that's what it's about. What's he get? He ends up being sick and wore out, can't sleep, worried about life. That's what all that does to you. And I don't know why we can't learn. Just be satisfied with what you got. And let that take care of you. But now notice here, he rings this bell again. This is the fifth time we're going to hear this statement made. This is what the writer's trying to teach us. If you're going to live life, don't take the top off of life. Some people are living life and they cut the top off. God's at the top of life. You want to live life, put God at the top. If you cut God off, you're wasting your time every day that you live. And so he says, behold, that which I have seen, it is good and comely for one to eat and to drink, and to enjoy the good of his labor that he taketh under the sun all the days of his life, which God giveth him, for it is his portion, every man also to whom God hath given riches and wealth, and giveth to him power to eat thereof, and to take his portion, and to rejoice in his labor. This is the gift of God. Now, here's a picture of God giving you all these things. You know where your money came from? God gave it to you. If God takes it back, you shouldn't be bothered. He gave it to you to start with. It wasn't your money. God gave it to you. So if he takes it away, you just say, well, okay, he gave it to me. It's his to take back. And when you think about life that way, and you look as this writer is painting a picture of what you should do every day, ever since, we've seen this over and over. Let this be the way you live. You enjoy life. What you've got, enjoy it. And don't be ashamed or embarrassed or feel like you've got to make an apology. I remember when my mama gave us a car years ago, a fairly new car, and I didn't want to drive the church building because I thought the brethren, oh, that preacher's making too much money. And so I finally got the courage to drive it. I parked it around the back of the building, and somebody said, what are you doing hiding over in the bushes? I said, well, I got a new car, and I didn't want you all to think bad of me. You know, I shouldn't have done that. I should have said, look, God gives me these cars, gave me these things, and so I'm not ashamed. And so the writer's just helping you see, whatever you do, enjoy that, do good with it, and notice God gives it to you. This is your gift in life. And know what God does? God gives everybody what they've got. But some people have things, and they don't know how to enjoy them. And the writer shows us in this verse 20, he says, for he shall not much remember the days of his life, because God answereth him in the joy of his heart. You know, you don't remember a lot of the bad days, but if you think about the fact that when God gives you something, God gives us something to enjoy, And some people, God gives them a can of peaches, and he gives me a can of peaches, but he doesn't give them the can opener, you see. And so they don't know how. They don't know. They haven't read their Bible. They don't know how to enjoy and have fun every day. Enjoy life every day, what you've got. God gives you the ability, if you listen to the Bible, how to enjoy life. Don't worry about it. Don't fret over it. Enjoy it. And realize, as the writer says here, finding this last verse, that what God is doing is God's telling us, you know what we're going to do as life goes on? We're not going to remember a lot of the days. I think about so many things in my life, and I look back about how people generally remember things. They often remember things by the bad things. You ever notice that? If you were to say to people, what happened in 1974? They said, the tornado was in 1974. Well, is that all that happened in 1974? Well, no. Well, what happened in 1976? Well, that was the year the baby fell in the garbage bucket, you know. You just remember, we look at life with all the bad things that go on. We ought to realize we often forget all that stuff, and we should. We should remember all the good. And God has given us all these good days. We've had great days in our life, and we're going to have some more great days. Now, I'm going to tell you, you're going to hit some bumps, going to have some trouble, and that's going to be the way life is. But if you can see the writer's trying to tell us, don't fall in love with the world. Don't get tangled up in thinking that money is what it's about, and just get out here and wear the hide off yourself trying to make money, thinking that'll do it. That's not going to do it. Whatever you've got, you every day enjoy what you have. Make the best out of it. And when you come to the end of the road, you'll sure be glad. I tell you, I've lived a great life. There were many times I couldn't pay my taxes on time. But I'm one of the richest men in the world. I've got all the treasures and riches, the blessings that are in Christ. That makes me one of the richest. I used to preach to people. Now, when you look at me, you're looking at one of the richest men in the world. And my youngest son started preaching a little bit. And he said, you know, when you look at my daddy, you look at the richest man. You look at me, you're looking at the second richest man. But I'm going to tell you, we all are rich. And we're blessed because we know what God has said. And we enjoy what He's given to us. And if you're here tonight, my friend, and you're not serving God, you have left the top off of life. You left what is the most important thing that you should think about at the top. And so tonight, would you think about that? Thank you for coming. And thank you for keeping your mouth closed and opening up your ears and listening. Now, as you go out that door, don't go out the way you came in. Go out there and start thinking about it. If I were to die between here and the parking lot, what would happen to me? God is going to call us into account. He's told us how to live. If you're not, my friend, don't live a vain life. Don't have to go through the third grade again. Or go through 44 again. You make sure as you live your life, you're going down the road and you're going somewhere because you're listening to God. If you're here tonight and need to respond to the gospel in any way, why don't you come as we stand and sing the song to encourage you.